Friday, August 30th. Unconfirmed reports from Vienna and Bucharest say that Romania has accepted terms by Italy and Germany for a settlement of the territorial dispute with Hungary. So far, there is no official statement. German bombings of British areas continue. London had a 40-minute air raid alarm this morning. It is reported that bombs fell on the outskirts of the city. Berlin reports the bombings of docks at Liverpool and Birkenhead. Rome says Italian planes raided a British military base in North Africa. Now the news direct from London and Berlin. Afterwards, an analysis from New York by Linton Wells. First, the report from the British capital by Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. We had an air raid alarm about noon today. It didn't last very long, only about 50 minutes. You know as much about what happened as I do. The streets appeared almost normal while the warning lasted. Watching from a rooftop, I could see no signs of planes and no anti-aircraft fire, although it is reported that the guns were in action in one London district. It is stated that a big fight over the southeast coast is now taking place at a high altitude. Last night, the 8.25 million people of Greater London got their first full night's rest in nearly a week. The sirens were not sounded for the small number of German planes which buzzed overhead just before dawn. A few bombs fell on the outskirts of the London area and in adjoining districts, damaging some suburban houses and injuring a number of people. Apparently, the London authorities didn't think it worthwhile to break the rest of London's tired citizens, nor to halt production of war supplies in the metropolitan area. Outside London, in the northeast and the Midlands, many firebombs and some high-explosive projectiles were dropped. But the Air Ministry reports little damage and says most of the bombs fell in fields. However, in Wales, private houses were damaged and one southeast coast town had three raids. An entertainment hall on the seafront was set afire. It was the northeast coastal district that received the brunt of last night's raids. Anti-aircraft guns were in action for hours against waves of German planes which toured wide areas in relays. Three roads were badly pocked with bomb craters, and England's convivial folk were deprived of two more public houses by high-explosive bombs. About 30 incendiary bombs hit a hospital in this region. All but one patient had gone to the shelters. A convalescent sailor remained with a man who was too ill to be moved. When a firebomb fell into their room, the sailor picked it up with blankets and tossed it out the window. Dr. Goebbels appears to have taken over from Marshal Goering last night. The German radio had promised Londoners their longest and heaviest raid of the war for last night. Some people expected it to happen. They listened for the sirens, and sometimes imagined they heard them. Perhaps that's one reason the Germans didn't come. During the last 5 days, the people of London had been undercover 7 times for a total of 21.5 hours, and they were undercover for a little less than an hour again today. These raids on London have caused very few casualties, but the disruption of production and transportation facilities has been considerable. The nights are growing longer, and the time may come when the raids will last 14 or 15 hours. There is considerable discussion in the press of the necessity for a revised policy in connection with the air raid warnings. Several papers advocate some kind of graduated scale, something like a few short blasts on the siren to indicate that just a few raiders are over, telling people who haven't anything better to do that they should take but not stopping factories and transport. This morning's press continues to devote its headlines to Wednesday night's raid on Berlin. The claims and counterclaims in this air war sound like echoes. Berlin says the British raiders hit nothing but private dwellings and killed only a few civilians. The Wilhelmstrasse says the purpose was to terrorize the public. London says pretty much the same thing about the German raids on this country. I've heard no case of London's man in the shelter complaining about the civilians who were killed in the Berlin raid. An insurance London is quoting a risk death or personal injury to civilians during air raids. This insurance scheme operates on a coupon basis, each coupon being good for 1 month. For example, if you were working in a British factory, you could buy a coupon for $1, insuring you for the month of September. If you were killed by a bomb, your heirs would get $1,000. This insurance is available to everybody except members of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and the auxiliary services. On the basis of experience so far, the individual's chances of escaping death by bombs are considerably better than 1,000 to 1. It sounds like a profitable scheme for the insurance company. I return now to CBS in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Here's a dispatch from Moscow. Soviet Russia has sent a strong protest and warning to Romania against provocations by Romanian troops along the new Romanian-Soviet frontier, the official TASS agency announced early today. Now dispatch from Rome. flying in successive waves over the British North African base at Masset Matruh, Egypt, Italian air formations yesterday dropped hundreds of bombs, striking military sheds, warehouses, and railroad yards. Now the news direct from the German capital.
This is Berlin. Berlin is tightening up its air raid precautions against the possibility of further British attacks on the capital. The police are now checking the names of all people in the shelters during an air raid. And by this method, they expect to find those persons who should have come down into the shelter instead of staying in their apartments or in bed. The air raid wardens have now been given police powers, and the public is instructed that they must be obeyed in... Last night, when I arrived home from the studio, I found a special warning from the hotel management in my room. It asked all the guests to go down to the basement shelter when the next alarm comes. And they may not stay in their rooms or in the lobby or the bar. And the notice pointed out that this concerned the personal safety of all. And the papers this morning accused some Berliners of using their flashlights, lighting cigarettes indiscriminately during the last alarms. What they guarded against, they add. Here's the gist of the High Command communique just issued regarding the activities of last night and yesterday. The German Air Force had reported to have attacked airfields in the counties of Lincoln and Suffolk, while industrial plants at Felixstowe, Wybridge, and in Wales were also raided. The High Command reports here that the harbors of Dundee, Rife, Hartlepool, and Liverpool were also bombed, and large fires were observed at Liverpool, it is further claimed. During all the operations, the British lost 2 planes over the Ruhr district and 19 in air battles elsewhere, for a total of 21, plus 6 barrage balloons, while the Germans lost 7 planes, according to the communique here. A U-boat is reported to have sunk 21,000 tons of enemy shipping. The Federal Office has just reported that the discussions in Vienna have come to a successful conclusion, and a more detailed communique regarding just what has been settled will be issued later in the day. As you know, since 9 o'clock this morning, Herr von Ribbentrop and Count Ciano, the Axis foreign ministers, have been in conversation with the Hungarian prime minister and foreign minister, and also the Romanian foreign minister. They have been meeting in Vienna to settle, if possible, some of the boundary problems between Hungary and Romania. The first anniversary of the Polish War is to be celebrated by the Germans and German authorities in Poland tomorrow and Sunday. In all the important towns and cities of the German part of Poland, the main squares will all be rechristened Adolf Hitler Platz
as part of the ceremonies.
All Germans are ordered to hoist swastika flags, and band concerts will be given. The Germans in Warsaw will reap some small dividends for being citizens of the conquering country. According to a decree published in the Warsaw Zeitung, Germans will be charged a lower fare than Poles when traveling in Warsaw streetcars. Henceforth, Germans will pay only 15 groschen for one trip, while the Poles pay full price of 25 groschen. Now, we have some news from occupied Poland. Henceforth, by order of the German military authorities, no private automobile traffic will be allowed from 10 in the evening until 4 in the morning. Another decree forbids any promenading on the Netherlands coast from sunset until dawn. Herr Hitler has ordered that a state funeral is to be held in Berlin today for Dr. Paul Nipkow, prominent German scientist and the inventor of a device that made possible television. He was 80 years old and is reported to have invented this device when just a young man. This is Edwin Hartridge. I'm returning now to Columbia in New York.
And here in New York is Linton Wells with more news and an analysis of late developments. Mr. Wells.
From the Germans this morning, according to the United Press, there is a hint of unsportsmanlike conduct on the part of the British. This news agency says the German Air Force officials have charged the English with the perfidious practice of painting their RAF planes with a secret type of varnish, which makes them invisible in the light of searchlights. It is asserted that, after a British plane had been shot down recently, the Germans held it in the ray of an automobile headlight, and it immediately became invisible. The Nazis intimate that this sort of thing isn't cricket, any more than the British bombings of Berlin are, which all inspired German papers denounce as unjustified slaughter of innocent civilians. The United Press quotes British spokesman as characterizing the Nazi invisible paint story as a lot of nonsense, adding that it sounds like an excuse for the German searchlights failing to pick up RAF machines. And as for the unjustified slaughter of innocent civilians during RAF attacks on Berlin, The British wonder a bit about reconciling it to Nazi aerial attacks on civilian centers throughout the British Isles. The mapmakers should be pleased by reported new developments in the Balkans. At Vienna, the foreign ministers of Germany and Italy, Ribbentrop and Ciano, have been laying down Nazi fascist law to the foreign ministers of Romania and Hungary, Manolescu and Kozaki. And as a consequence, as Edwin Hartridge told us from Berlin a few minutes ago, it appears that a so-called satisfactory formula for settlement of the Romanian-Hungarian territorial dispute has been reached. The formula undoubtedly is satisfactory to all parties except Romania, which has no choice in the matter. It is understood that Germany and Italy have arbitrarily awarded Hungary 15,000 of Transylvania's 22,000 square miles, besides the so-called Zecler area, which extends from 60 to 90 miles into Romania and has some 500,000 Hungarian residents. Which means that Romania will probably be just a shadow of her former self after the boys get through carving her up. But there are developments in another direction which threaten the entire existence of King Carol's domain. It was announced in Moscow today that the Kremlin had formally demanded that Romania provide an early and satisfactory answer to Russian protests against alleged recent and current Romanian army provocations on the Bessarabian frontier. The Kremlin said bluntly that Romania will be held responsible for consequences if Russian casualties caused the situation to take a grave turn. Some observers say this reminds them of a situation wherein a massive thug has not only robbed and beaten a Lilliputian victim, then is threatening to murder him, simultaneously justifying his act to onlookers by charges of unprovoked attack. In any event, this would appear to be a prelude to a Russian move into Moldavia, which would bring the Red Army to the border of Transylvania, and if the Italo-German cession plan goes into effect, on the back door steps of Hungary. It would also put the Russians into Galatz, a strategic point of the Danube, dominating the Dobruja, which Romania is being forced to cede to Bulgaria. If this is done, there will be little left of Romania except the southern province of Wallachia, and Yugoslavia wants some of that. These are the developments which may have caused King Carol to hold an urgent all-night cabinet and crown council session. But it is more likely that it was held chiefly to ratify the Italo-German settlement of Hungary's territorial claims, pursuant to demands from Berlin and Rome for quick action, because the longer the Balkan pot simmers, the more chances there are of it boiling over, which would prove extremely upsetting to German and Italian plans vis-a-vis Britain. While the fate of Romania appears to be sealed, Germany and Italy cannot help but be disturbed by Russia's uncompromising attitude. There are apparently reliable reports that Hitler has sent an emissary to Stalin to inform him that southeastern Europe, as it will stand after the Hungarian and Bulgarian settlements, is an Italo-German sphere, particularly German, and that the Russians must not extend their present Balkan frontiers. Just what Hitler and Mussolini propose to do if Stalin rejects this Nazi viewpoint and orders the Red Army into Moldavia is not clear. But however much the British may hope for it, a rupture of Russo-German relations does not appear to be on the calendar, not at least until Germany has emerged from this war as victor or loser. Then the fireworks between Germany and Russia will start. In the meantime, Hitler will probably reconcile himself to continued Russian penetration into areas which will improve the position of the USSR, even though Soviet occupation of Moldavia will be a continued threat to his supplies from southeastern Europe and enable the Russians by occupying Galatz to control the mouth and lower reaches of the Danube. That the acute situation between Italy and Greece is no less serious is indicated by official advices from Athens, announcing the calling of further reservists to the colors. Turkey continues to be the X of the Eastern Mediterranean equation, but Ankara is keeping a vigilant eye on the situation and maneuvering its large mobilized forces in anticipation of an Italian move into Greece.
And with this analysis by Linton Wells from New York, Columbia concludes another regular morning report of European developments. Edward R. Murrow reported from London. Edwin Hartridge reported from Berlin. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Columbia.